Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. I'm your host, Tommy Casabona, as we talk everything that is Yankee baseball news, offbeat reactions, opinions, irreverent discussions, everything that involves our beloved New York Yankees, the Bronx Bombers, the men in pinstripes, whatever you want to call them. Thank you again for tuning in. Please, guys, I want to make this interactive. So please, write me, email me, yankeesandgravy@gmail.com, @yankeesandgravy on Twitter. Find me on iTunes. If you go on iTunes and just search, first of all, you got to do it on your phone. It's nice and easy. You can listen to it on the way to work, wherever you are, just simply nice and easy on your phone. You got to go to the App Store. You download the podcast app. Just type in podcast app and you see it there. It gives you a little icon. And then you download that to your phone. And then once you have that downloaded, you search within that app for Yankees and Gravy. Sounds complicated. I make it sound complicated. It's not complicated. Just check out, or you can go to Podomatic.com, find Yankees and Gravy. You could check me out on Twitter like I talked about. I'm just going to try to be just shoving this stuff down your throat as much as possible. We're having more fun each week doing this. We're starting to get some letters, starting to get some reactions, and we could not be more pumped about that. So let's get into it today. What do we want to talk about? Our buddy, Nova. Ivan Nova. That's right. 14-month absence. He had the Tommy John surgery. How do we pronounce his name? How do you pronounce his name? Ivan Nova? I've always gone with Ivan. I know a couple of people who like to say Ivan Nova. We're going to go with Ivan on Yankees and Gravy. Ivan. Ivan Nova, 14-month absence. So he pitched today, and obviously he pitched very well. We needed it. It was very important that he played the role of stopper today, whatever you want to call it, ace, if you will. Our two aces, if you want to call CeCe an ace or former ace or hopefully future ace once again, once he figures out how to pitch in the sub-90-mile-per-hour range, if that ever happens and if he stays healthy. He obviously wants to become a top front of the rotation pitcher. It's not happening as of now. He's definitely has shown signs this year of being able to flirt with being able to be a number three or four starter. But like the team, like many players on the team, what's missing is that level of consistency. So let's talk about Nova. What did he do on the gun today? He was consistently between 93 and 94 with his fastball. He did have that 12-mile-an-hour difference on his off-speed stuff, which is good. He did touch 95 on a couple of pitches, but basically lived in the 93-94 range. He was topping out at 93 when he was in the minor leagues. Now, they always say, every pitching coach, they'll tell you, once you get to the show, that adrenaline gets up there. And that's why when they are on a rehab stint or they are in the spring training phase or whatever, you saw with Dylan Betances, he barely hit 93-94 on the gun the hole. Now he's back up to 99. They basically say there's just a level of adrenaline that has to be a part of you being able to touch those high mile per hour numbers. And it's very difficult to muster that adrenaline. It's very difficult to generate that adrenaline in these, I guess, you know, minor league ballparks or minor league settings or spring training settings down in Florida. So that was proven again today. Ivan Nova did and was able to get to 95 on the gun. His line, what did he do? He basically pitched 6 1/3. He did not let up any runs, just 3 hits, 1 strikeout. That's weird. He only had 1 strikeout. You may figure maybe 3 or 4 strikeouts at least, but he only had 1 strikeout. But who cares? I mean, you know, great if you have strikeouts, but, you know, cut down on the pitches, keep your pitch count low. I don't know if they expected him to go into the 7th inning. I think you're looking at with Nova is basically he basically gave us a best case scenario. Only 2 walks. The catcher John Ryan Murphy was asked about what he observed in Nova's return, and he was just basically saying how surprised he was that Nova. He seemed very composed. You know what I mean? There was no pregame jitters. He was obviously amped up. He talked about it. He was almost in tears last night. He said he couldn't sleep last night. He didn't even stay at the game last night. He got home in hopes of getting some rest. He wasn't able to. Tossing and turning all night, as he says. And almost in tears as he walked out of the tunnel onto the field. And so there is a lot of adrenaline. But once the ump yelled play ball, Ivan Nova was able to be a he was able to show very workmanlike and down to business characteristics on that mound. So that's good, man. If he can live in that area, the guy's dynamic. He always was. Sometimes he showed the ability to be a little bit of a head case. Never really. He made some stupid statements. What did he say one time? I'll tell you right now, I'm the best pitcher in baseball. And then you know, Paulie is like, well, it's called confidence. What do you want the guy to say? You want him to believe that he can be the best pitcher in baseball. Guess that's the case. I guess that's the truth. The counter argument to that is, yeah, but do you have to say it? Do you have to say it out loud without having done a whole lot? We all know this guy's got potential. He has done stuff in the major leagues. He's proven to be, when healthy, a very solid major league pitcher. He's had a bunch of clunkers too. I mean, when he's gone into slumps where he's not been able to find it. But you know, when he's on, he's one of the good ones. And hopefully the Yankees just got a top of the front end rotation guy in Ivan Nova. It was nice to see him leave to a standing ovation, tipped his cap, went into the dugout. So Ivan Nova's back in the mix, and hopefully for a long time. They have not said who comes out of the rotation. Girardi, as recently as maybe 5 or 6 days ago, did say unequivocally that CC Sabathia was not coming out of the rotation. Now, I don't know what that means. Did he say he's not coming out of the rotation? There's no plans for CC Sabathia to come out of the rotation. So that doesn't mean that tomorrow there will be. But that's an interesting topic because, you know, everybody keeps saying Adam Warren is the guy that's going to be the odd man out. The reason being is because he'll be the best guy to go into the bullpen. And there is a legitimate need in the bullpen for a guy of basically what Warren can do. CC Sabathia can be taken out of the rotation, and honestly, there's nobody that probably can honestly say that he's not the one that deserves to be taken out of the rotation. But just on a confidence level, you're talking about an all-time great pitcher here, and he's just going through it right now. So do you take him out of the rotation, destroy his confidence, and basically render him useless, and you still have not solved your bullpen problem? Or do you continue to let him work through it, understand that it's going to be a 50-50 at best shot every time he goes out there to pitch, take Warren out, solidify your bullpen, and you actually take care of a need? It's a tough call. I mean, if the Yankees and, you know, Cashman's shown to have, if anything, like, I'm not the biggest Cashman guy, as you guys well know, but he's got balls. The guy definitely does have balls. And if they want to go with the straight decision on who is the guy that, based on starting pitching, stat line, how things are going, and who should be doing what, they're going to go. Just hold on one second. They're going to go with Warren and take CC Sabathia out. If they want to get gangster with it, you're going to see a headline: CC out of the rotation. Who knows what happens? He's going to have to say the right things. He's going to have to do the right things. And what's going to happen? Somebody's going to go down. He's going to be back in the rotation. But, you know, at least hopefully not long term. But, you know, I don't mean to be pessimistic. But, you know, how often do you have the same five starters healthy, not missing starts all the way through from June till hopefully deep into October? So, you know, CC Sabathia is still going to be a part of this team if he gets taken out of the rotation, and it's going to be up to him to be able to keep a head on his shoulders. And that's going to be a crapshoot, which is another reason. How will, you know, Adam Warren will go to the bullpen. I heard it loud and clear. I know from the beginning he was not so excited at the thought of it, and he refused to even kind of mention it, and he was kind of pressed in an interview I heard last week. Listen, Warren said it. He said, you know what, if I got to go to the bullpen, I'm not going to be so happy about it. I understand it's because I can bring something to the table back there, and if I got to go back there, I will. Whatever helps the team. And he is at the part of his career, the stage in his career where, you know what, yes, Warren, if they ask you to go to the bullpen, you're going to have to do it with a smile. With CC, it's going to be an adventure, which is why probably the sound move is to put Warren in the bullpen. And really, hopefully, you know, CC Sabathia has, you know, he had all-star Cy Young type stuff. He doesn't have that speed anymore, but if he can turn into an Andy Pettit and learn how to pitch like so many people did, like Ron Guidry did, like David Cone did, like all these guys did, then maybe we end up having the best of both worlds, which is an effective CC and a solidified bullpen, hopefully. We could all hope, right? Perfect world scenario. Happened tonight with Nova, who knows? Let's talk about Teixeira, Mark Teixeira. Went down for a couple of days with a neck injury. Anytime Teixeira goes down, and you don't want to use the word brittle with him because he's a man. He's a beast. It's more like the unlucky side of it. The guy does get legitimate injuries. I don't feel like – and I'm not going to knock Ellsbury, but I'm going to say it. He's not an Ellsbury. Ellsbury – and I'm not going to say Ellsbury is soft, but I wouldn't – I would use the word – brittle when I talk about Ellsbury, brittle and slow to heal. Teixeira is just a little older now, and he gets, you know, he's a physical player, and he's a big dude. He's got a lot of moving parts going on in that body, and he gets injured. You know what I mean? So anytime Tex gets injured, everybody's wondering, you know, how long is he going to be out for? How serious is this? He had a stiff neck. I don't know if it's more serious than that. As of right now, it's not. He had a stiff neck, sat out two games, got a cortisone shot, felt better today. At the time of this podcast is right around midnight, so I'm still saying today as far as today's game, which was on the 24th. Technically, we're going into the 25th here, but I'm still acting like it's today. So today, Tex did play, and he put on a show. Went 3-for-5, felt great. After the game, said he still felt great. Not 100%, but he thinks the cortisone shot is going to work, and he will be fine, and it's not going to be anything serious or long-term. We will see. Let's hope for the best again. this is one of my favorite stories that is going on right now. And by favorite, I mean I can't freaking stand it. This guy, Zach Hampel. When I say the name Zach Hampel, does that mean anything to you? What do you think when I say that household name Zach Hampel? He's famous. Granted, it's a 15-minute fame run, but he is famous right now, and the reason he is famous is because he is a professional ball hawk, and he is the man who caught Alex Rodriguez's 3,000th hit, which ended up being a home run. This guy, I mean, this guy's lucky he's just throwing the charity in there. I feel like, you know, don't take offense to this, all charity people, because I am certainly not talking to all people that deal with charities. I think this country, and of course it's a good thing, has gone so charity happy that it's almost like become like a hip niche thing to do to say what charity you're involved with, and you know this and that. I want it to happen. I like when people donate to charity, and I like when people don't want credit for it. I like when people have causes that are close to their heart, donate and support, but they don't necessarily advertise that they do it. Having said that, this guy is saying he's basically saying he wants a sizable donation to a charity. At first, it was unknown what that charity was. It did come out later on. A representative from the charity was there. This guy had a freaking meeting. This guy had a meeting with Randy Levine, the vice president of the Yankees. Well, I don't know what his title is, but he's I think he's above Cashman, below Steinbrenner, something like that. Whatever. Guy actually had to sit and meet with Zach Hampel, and he wants a sizable donation. A monetary amount was not clarified, and the charity is called Pitching for Baseball. And I think what they do is their cause is to donate, acquire funding to donate baseball equipment to underprivileged children. That's great. Love that charity. Love the cause. I just take that aside. This guy just seems like a complete dickhead. He's making these statements. He's obviously savvy. It's a social media world. A jerk off like me is in my freaking bedroom doing a podcast. Everybody wants to, you know, act like they know it all or have all this media savvy and in the digital or content world, everybody knows and has exactly the right things to say to make the right soundbite. And this guy basically is saying, you know, me and the Yankees are meeting, and I really like how they're handling the negotiations, and I have not provided them with my demands. I could tell you 2 days ago we weren't close. Today we're very... Get this jerk off out of my life. I want Zach Campbell to go away now, really. All this guy is doing now, barring the charity thing. Charity, good, I get it. But all this guy is doing is trying to elongate his 15 minutes. And I'm kind of done with it. I am dying for A-Rod. And he already kind of made a statement that the ball doesn't really matter so much with him. LaVine probably wants it just for the Yankee Museum or just the fact that he could profit on it anyway, because that's just kind of like the Yankees' MO as of forever, but increasingly in the post-Boss era, Hal era, it seems more and more strictly about, you know, the bottom line not even the revenue, the profit that they go home with at the end of the day. So, I don't know. Hopefully they don't give him anything, and hopefully he keeps his ball, and hopefully he goes home, and that's it. I don't care. It's a freaking baseball. A-Rod, his statement was, the greatest memory I have in baseball is winning a World Series in 2009. I don't have a ball from that. I don't have a bat from that. I only have the memories, and that's all I need. It's kind of how I feel about the 3,000th hit. I don't need the ball. So good for him, A-Rod. Once again, whoever the PR guy that he's dealing with is doing a tremendous job. They should be PR guy of the year. Or maybe I'm being cynical and this really is the new A-Rod, and we should be, you know, assuming that all his words are genuine and he means everything he says. Great turnaround, you know, whatever. But either way, I just hope this guy goes away. Let's move on. Chase Headley, holy shit. I don't know how much longer you're going to be able to allow this guy to play third base. It's getting to that point. What is it? 16 errors. 10 of them throwing, 6 fielding. And I think he got lucky on a couple of calls. His confidence is so shot in the infield that he's afraid of the ball. Watch him, you know, these hot shots, and I'm not saying they're easy plays, but he's not even trying to knock them down anymore. He's Olaying stuff left and right. He's throwing the ball all over the place. I was just about to kind of just put him in the Steven Drew category, but he did get that home run, I'll say last night, meaning Tuesday night, which got us right back into the game. And you know what? He's hitting a little bit. And he's got some timely hitting going on as well. So you can't necessarily say he's useless. But what did we do with what's his name? I talked to Madam the other day. The guy we sent down, and then we eventually traded. Forgot his name. The guy could get hit, played third base. It's going to come to me in about 15 minutes. I'm going to just yell it into the microphone when I'm talking about something else. But you know the guy. The guy, that's going to drive me freaking nuts. And I know if you're listening to this freaking podcast, you're all screaming it at me right now. I know you are, and I'm sorry. I'm failing you right now. But the guy couldn't field. The guy was hitting lights out. The guy was hitting doubles, triples, I mean, doubles and singles left and right. And whatever. He couldn't hit. He couldn't field. He was a liability defensively. And if we're going to go to the next level, which we absolutely can, and we'll talk about the state of the team at the end, but this team, I mean, with a couple of moves and a couple of things that bounce the right way, we can be a great team. But we cannot do that if we have a third baseman who can't make a play or can't be relied upon to make a play. What's next? Steven Drew, our buddy Steven Drew, paternity leave. Congratulations, Steven Drew. Your family is growing, and I absolutely congratulate you on that. And take this the right way, guys. I am not knocking paternity leave, but tell me, is that something that's new? Paternity leave. Did they just name it? What I remember is you didn't leave your team back in the day. You know, I'm not saying it was better because of that. I'm not saying that these baseball players' wives should be left to give birth to their children by themselves while the husbands run around and play a child's game. I'm just trying to compare slash contrast the two eras. Write me, YankeesandGravy@gmail.com, if you know. I could have sworn paternity leave is a brand new thing, isn't it? Or isn't it? And what do you guys think? Is it better? Should these players expected to be staying with their team? They're making $1 million. They're making millions of dollars. They are counted on day in, day out as a team. Not to live. If you have 24 guys and these guys are all young guys and starting families, if everybody left to have a baby for a few days, it would happen fairly regularly. Is paternity leave a new thing or an old thing? And what do you guys think about its validity? Do you think these guys should be gone for a couple of days to deal with the birth of their children? Let me know what you think. I guess that's more of just a question I'm throwing out there. I don't know what my opinion is on it. I haven't really thought it through. I would think that, you know, if you really want to be there for your wife one day, and you know what, it's your responsibility to be back for the very next day, I would think. That's kind of like my knee-jerk reaction, but tell me what you think. Joe Girardi, got a little wacky again today. Now, he got thrown out of the game, and he describes the story as going just like this. He didn't swing. He yells out to the umpire, he didn't swing. The ump says, "I didn't hear what you said. What'd you say?" And Girardi said, "He didn't swing." The ump says, "Hey, Joe, I'm telling you, knock it off." And then he said, "I'll knock it off, but I'm telling you, he didn't swing. What do you want me to knock?" And then Joe said anything, the guy was basically saying, "Knock it off," meaning shut the fuck up. Don't talk to me anymore. It's over. It's a ball and strike argument. I'm not going to deal with it. And Girardi kept going, and he got thrown out. And Girardi did not seem to be so upset about being thrown out of this game. And the last time he got thrown out with CC, that was another game. By the way, CC pitched good that game, man. See, so he might get it. You don't know. You can't expect him to just get it, and then once he gets it, he's back to throwing seven innings, no runs, you know, three hits, and you know, like Nova today. It's going to be an up and down. It's going to be some setbacks. So Girardi gets kicked out of another day game. Now, is Girardi just not liking to be out in the sun in the middle of the day? These are the midweek day games he seems to be getting kicked out of. That's two in a row. It's interesting, you know. Not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but I don't know. You be the judge. Getting kicked out of day games. Brendan Ryan's done for at least a little while. He got a sore back and a sore mustache. No, that's funny. How funny is that freaking mustache? This guy is – I don't know if they're making him wear it. They might be that. The guy was around last year. He was a good guy to have around. Not a superstar by any stretch. Not a star by any stretch. But a good utility guy, and you kind of got used to seeing him out there. He was part of the team. From all accounts, he seems to be a relatively popular part of the team. He's injured for most of the year. Beginning of this year, they do that mustache thing again. I don't know. I thought it was cool back in – what was it, 2008, 2009, and it was funny. I don't like that they brought it back. I mean, all right, we did it once. I mean, the mustaches flat out look creepy, but it was at least funny. I was in Pittsburgh. I was working in Pittsburgh, and, you know, Giambi was doing it, and everybody was doing it. All these guys were doing the hardcore mustaches, and it was funny. And it was just known. The Yankees were a mustache team, and the Yankees hadn't been to PNC Park, I don't think, ever before that. And I was happened to be working out there at the, like I said, I work at that bar, McFadden's, right adjacent to PNC Park where the Pirates play. Yankees were coming into town. I was all excited. And, yeah, they brought the mustaches. I shaved up. I had my mustache going. It was a cool, unique thing. It was to the point where the mascot of the Pittsburgh Pirates, forgot his name. Do you guys know I was actually, while I was out there, you know they do those they do the pierogi race, and they race five pierogies. They put them in uniforms, and it's like the Washington president's race. I was a pierogi. I got to be a pierogi once. It's cool. You get to go into the bowels of the stadium. They're very serious about that. I'll tell that story quick. Because I was running the restaurant that's right next door. You know, I had a pretty good affiliation with the Pirates, and through a friend who was one of the bartenders who had a stronger affiliation, they got us to actually be the pierogies for a day. So we are, it's basically our staff, the couple of bartenders, me who runs the place, and a couple of servers. We were the pierogies for that day. I was Oliver Onion. That was my name. That was one of the pierogies. I think there's also Jalapeno Hannah, or, you know, a bunch of them. I don't remember the names, but so you go into the bowels of the stadium around the second inning. There's a guy who handles this, you know, the pierogi guy, and he takes his job very seriously. God bless him. Puts you in the room, tells you the whole deal. Tells you you're going to go walk out. We walk out basically to where the bullpen is. We're walking by major league players, I guess the pitchers who are sitting in the dugout, and they want to walk out to the bullpen. We're seeing them left and right. So then we get into costume. We put on the costume. It's basically freaking black bodysuit tights. And then you put basically a pierogi, you know, furry or whatever it is, like a foamy type of uniform on top of that. So then we go and, you know, we're ready for the pierogi race. He tells us basically, all right, you come out of the gate and you run. You stay on the warning track and you run at a moderate speed. And you just run to the finish line, and who's going to win? So we have to predetermine the winner. So we said the girl, Jalapeno Hannah, was going to win. Now, that's all we told them. Guys, you're not going to get on a Major League Baseball field and not at least kind of do some sort of a, you know, you're not going to, I mean, we're going to do something, basically. So we say we're going to, all right, so Jalapeno Hannah's going to win. They give her a purse as like a accessory to hold. I guess it's so you know it's a female pierogi. So we go out there, and it's the seventh inning, and I am a baseball freak, baseball junkie all my life, hadn't played in a while. Now you're going to turn me loose on a major league field? So our plan was for me to sprint, and I was going to go hard. And then right before the finish line, I was going to fake a heart attack and then let Jalapeno Hannah jog past me, hit me with the purse, and she wins. That's the plan. Very simple. Wasn't meant to be complicated. Wasn't meant to disrupt, you know, their whole day or whatever. It was just a little cute little thing we were going to try to pull off to make it at least somewhat memorable for the people who were videotaping it. So all goes as planned. I come out of the gate, and I'm freaking hightailing it. I'm on a warning track. I get my footing, and I'm in a pierogi outfit, but I don't give a shit. I'm acting like I am freaking trying to score from first on a freaking double. And I go hard, fake the heart attack right before, as planned. The problem is that there is very, very, very minimal visibility out of these uniforms. So you can't really see anything except exactly what's in front of you. So I keel over, double over in pain, acting like I'm having a heart attack. I don't know if they believed it or not. The other three pierogies, they can't see because I'm bent over. They don't know where I am. They ram into me, and there's four of us on the floor, and then Hannah, Jalapeno Hannah, who was Jen Rizzo, the gun, pops by us, hits me with the freaking purse as planned, and wins. But we're all rolling around on the floor in the dirt as dirty pierogies. So we get on the now it's over. So now we're led by that guy who was, you know, running the show for the pierogies, walks us. It seemed like a walk forever. Like we had to walk back into the stands all the way from third base, the third baseline, foul territory, all the way back to where basically home plate is, back into the bowels of the stadium, and back into the, I guess, was office, which is like the pierogi locker room. And this guy, now I'm a freaking grown man. At the time I was, what, 34, 35, I don't know. And 34 years old. And I'm the boss of all the people that are there. So I'm in charge of the restaurant. So all these people see me as an authority figure. And the guy, as soon as we take off our mask, our basically our headpieces, the guy looks at me dead in the eye, beet red face, in character, screams at me, "Oliver, what were you thinking out there?" And I just started dying laughing because this guy, God bless him, like I said, he takes his job so seriously that he's in charge of this, and he just had so much pride in these things going right every day. And I love that. And to the point where I was still Oliver to him. He wasn't going to call me Tommy. He was still going to call me Oliver because, you know what? I'm in that uniform, and damn it, I'm still Oliver. As long as I'm in that uniform. Guy was well-trained, stickler, fundamentals, good for him, by the books. No, I don't knock him at all. He said the same thing to me, too. When if somebody wants to bartend, then you give them instructions to bartend, and they don't listen to... I was like, man, you're right, man. You're right. And in front of my staff, I'm like, man, I'm sorry, man. You're right. You're right. You got me. This is a little guy, too, just screaming at me. But he was right, you know? It just went a little further and got a little out of hand than I thought it would. All right, that's my Oliver Onion story. Maybe I'll post a video somewhere on the Facebook page or the Twitter page if anyone gives a shit about that, which they don't. So Brendan Ryan with the stash. I feel like Brendan Ryan, so he's making up for lost time. Like the stash thing happened again this year, but it seems like it died out. I don't really see too many stashes out there anymore. And, you know, they call him the last stash. Shave the stash, Brendan. You missed it. It's done. I feel like, man, I missed the whole stash thing. I want to be part of the guys so much. I'm going to wear the stash, even though nobody is, because now I'm finally playing. And that's funny, pathetic, and admirable all at the same time. Love you, Brendan. But they took him off the roster. He's got a sore back. It doesn't seem to be that much, that tough, that hard of an injury, or that severe of an injury. And he doesn't seem to think that he'd be out that long. But he's going to be on the disabled list simply because of roster moves. Girardi basically said, we can't carry all these guys. We're shorthanded in the bullpen. We're shorthanded in general. And we got to basically put you on the DL because, you know, we need the numbers. We need the numbers on the roster, and we got to fill it up. What did I want to say? Oh, this has nothing to do with baseball, but Jeter. So Jeter got an investor. He has that website that he started, I think with a couple of other guys, called the Players Tribune. Now, here's where you guys may just unsubscribe to me. And you know what? Just please don't. It's just an opinion. And as crazy as it is, you got to remember, I go back way before Jeter. I go to Winfield. I go to Mattingly. I don't go to Reggie. But I go back very far. And I'm going to preface this by saying I do freaking love me some Jeter. Derek Jeter, there's nobody more responsible for the magical moments and the joy that I have experienced watching these Yankees. You know, I bring people in from out of town. I know people from all over the country. I bring them to a Yankee game. And in those, you know, even when they weren't winning the World Series, even after 2001, there was still just a mojo about them. I feel like it died. I feel like it died when those freaking bugs were freaking mating on Jabba Chamberlain's earlobes and in Cleveland that night, and Joe Torre left the team. It was a new era when Girardi took over. That was 2007. 2008 sucked. We got the we didn't make anything in 2008. That was the last year of the stadium. There was still in that building with that manager and with that team, even though we hadn't won shit, there was still always a mojo. And I would bring people around, and that circus-like atmosphere in that stadium would turn people who just didn't give a fuck or hated the Yankees into lifelong Yankee fans. Because it didn't matter that it was 2003, 2004, a couple of years since we won anything. You could still sit in that stadium, feel it vibrate, and you could have where you're down two runs and Derek Jeter's up with two men on, and then 50,000 people screaming, Derek Jeter. And he would put a freaking ball in those right field seats. And that would just happen. And there was just a magic there. And so I'm saying, Jeter, I love. I was at the game where he got his 3,000th. He said, all right, so you guys waiting for a butt. Here's the butt. This guy is a little bit too much for me sometimes. He doesn't let you in. I feel like he must have been burned. I feel like he's a little vindictive. I feel like, you know, that whole A-Rod thing when A-Rod said that he wasn't as much of a threat as Bernie or as much of a threat as some of the other guys on the team. He was right. He should not have said that. He should not have said that at all. But Jeter literally was like, that was it. Once he said that, That was his boy. They were tight as two people in any they were as good of friends as any two guys on a baseball field. Once A-Rod said that, there was nothing A-Rod could do to get forgiveness from Jeter. And that stayed all through. And that's still currently there. But whatever. And I didn't like that he never gave you anything. You never got to know this guy. He was always with the one-word answers. He was always with the, canned soundbite stuff. He always looked annoyed to be interviewed. He hated the questions. He would make no bones about telling you he hated the questions. And I'm like, Derek, you got these models, you got these yachts, you got these mansions. This is why. Deal with it a little bit. Loved the freaking will to win. Loved the way he carried himself on the baseball field. And is right up there with my favorite all-time Yankees, if not my favorite all-time Yankee. But that side of him, I did think he was a little bit of an asshole. Kill me for saying it, whatever. And I further think he's a little bit of an asshole is because he's freaking dating Hannah Davis. Not a hater whatsoever. Come on, guys. You're Derek Jeter. This is a guy who's ultimate epitome of class, the ultimate epitome of, a guy who just carried himself the right way, of good moral fiber. His parents, you listen to his parents talk, you see why he seems to be just a gentleman. But then, in the girls he dates, it just comes through. He's basically saying to you, I'm Derek Jeter, and I'm going to date the hottest piece of asses in the world. And this is the girl. Well, if I'm going to date somebody, it's going to be the girl who's on the freaking cover of Sports Illustrated. Do you know how many pretty girls, beautiful women are out there that are not models but probably could be? Women that run businesses, that do things for charity, that are important members of society, up-and-comers, just powerful, smart, intelligent, funny women. Now, I don't know this Hannah Davis from a hole in the wall. Maybe she's a future CEO. She's going to be an Oprah or Martha Stewart when she's older. I don't know. She could be. But all I am saying is Derek Jeter can't find a really, really pretty girl who's just really good at what she does, a singer and all. Like when he was even dating Minka Kelly, that was even okay, because now you're just dealing with a beautiful, drop-dead gorgeous girl who does have a skill. She's one of the better actresses on TV, or at least one of the more famous actresses on TV with a little ambition. Does he have to date a freaking flawless Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition cover model? Because he's got to pick the hottest of the hot. Are you going to tell me that? I mean, maybe she is. Maybe she's also a tycoon in waiting. But, Jeter, come on. Find somebody that's a little more low-key, that's a little bit more of a partner, that's a little bit more, what do you have to go out and make the statement that you're going to find and date the hottest piece of ass in the world? That goes against, to me, his humble, his quiet, but strong leadership mentality, his nice guy mentality. It's basically, by dating a girl like that, it basically seems like, maybe this is freaking me. I don't know. This is my opinion, guys, so that's why it's my podcast, and, we can disagree on things, but I just think it's making a statement. Who's the hottest piece of ass right now in all of modeling? Who's the girl on the cover of the Sports Illustrated. Oh, what's her name? Hannah Davis. Okay, give me her. Go get her for me. And then there's a report. It doesn't mean nothing. They split the bill in Italy over some pizza. Who cares? I don't know. That's my feeling on Jeter. I think personally, he just is a little bit of a dick. I'm not going to lie. I feel like that about Derek Jeter. But he's the captain. And I'll close this whole little freaking thing by saying thank you. Because you freaking, you've been the main reason for why the joy I've gotten out of being a Yankee fan over the past 35 years. I'm 40 now, guys, in case anybody gives a shit. 35 years has been because of Derek Jeter, and I thank you for that. But Derek, lighten up, man. Smile to the media. Give yourself. Let them get to know you a little bit. Give us something. Give us something, Jeter. Come on. The Players Tribune. That's because he hates the media so much, he's going to freaking – his whole post-career business endeavor is going to be based on trying to cut out the media. I get it. We get it. You hate the media. Injury stuff, nothing much to talk of. Andrew Miller threw 25 pitches recently. He has a goal to throw from a mound in about 12 days. And then once he throws from a mound, you know, they'll start getting into simulated games. Then it'll be rehab. And hopefully he'll be back. Who the F knows when? Hopefully not too long after the All-Star break. Same with Ellsbury, but no news on Ellsbury. I guess Jordy, they asked him, Jordy, any news on Ellsbury? He goes, nope. And I don't know what that means. Does that mean it's, it can mean you're frustrated? It can mean you're like, you know, I don't know what the hell this guy's problem is. But we need him on the field, and he needs to start running, and he needs to start playing. And, you know, like I said, he was running the other day, maybe 4 or 5 days ago. He said, ah, it feels a little stiff, and he stopped running. Again, I'm not accusing him of being soft. I just know he does have a little bit of that reputation, and I do know he's not on the field, and I do know that he's just complaining that his knee, it's a bruised knee, and he's saying it's still tight. What else? All right, Yankees as a whole in general right now. We lost 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. That's a problem. We got killed the day before the last who was it against the Tigers. Yeah, the Tigers crushed Tanaka. Then we got our asses kicked by the Phillies with Pineda, Big Mike, and then CeCe took a beating, which is not so unexpected. And then Nova saved us today. So we dropped 2 out of 3 to the lowly Phillies, which are the worst team in baseball. Again, that is baseball. Sometimes you're going to lose 2 out of 3 to the last place teams. I don't like the way it happened, though. You don't like your good pitchers getting smoked. And one of the bright spots is the offense. It's pretty much proven that we can score with anybody, and you don't see that changing. You don't see, you know, A-Rod doesn't need to play the field, so you're not holding your breath. I mean, he may get hurt, but you're not like so sure he's going to go down. Tex seems pretty healthy, and the team in general seems okay. We really need Ellsbury back because that 1-2 at the top with Gardner. Gardner has been knocking the shit out of the ball, hasn't he? So that's good. Offensively, up and down, McCann has been doing very, very well. Love seeing McCann having a much better start to the year than he did last year. And Beltran is hitting 260 now. I don't know the numbers, but he must be hitting like 350 over the last, you know, I guess 4 weeks or so, because he started out like shit. It was terrible. But he's even hitting, he can't play a lick of defense and has to come out of the game after every seventh inning. But at the same time, he's hitting the ball very well. So offense is taken care of. You have to keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully, the defense will eventually wake up and come around. And the pitching is, let's just say, it's okay. Now, we get Miller back. Betances is doing what he's doing. And then we get Warren in the bullpen. And we get rid of CeCe. And we get Hamels. Now, I know it was weird with Hamels with A-Rod today. We'll talk about that in a second. But think about that. Tanaka, Pineda, Hamels, Nova, and Eovaldi. That's a freaking starting five right there. That you can go to war with anywhere and any place. And you got yourselves a team. You go from being like right now, I think, you know, with these guys hurt and with us not having Hamels, you got a team that basically can probably eke out a division win in this week division. Get Hamels and you get some of these guys healthy. Honestly, we're going for it. We're going for it. I'm not saying we have a guaranteed World Series by any stretch, but we're in the mix with anybody, I think. You know what I mean? We still probably wouldn't be favored to win the World Series, but I like our chances just as much as anyone. So I think if we're going to overpay and overspend, which we will probably be doing for Hamels, you know, it sucks too because you get it on both ends. You're going to have to give up some good young talent, and you're going to have to pay this guy a freaking fortune and a contract that he's probably not going to live up to long term. But again, like I said previously on one of the other podcasts, you don't always get a chance to win. There's no guarantee that next year's team will be or have as good a chance to win as this year's team. And if you have a shot at it, I always say you got to go take it. And that's kind of how I feel on the current state of the Yanks. Old-timers Day, I didn't talk about last time, and I meant to, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it because I screwed up last podcast and glazed over it. But I just wanted to comment on how deserving Willie Randolph was. He's one of the guys I broke in with as far as watching the team, watching him at second base, just a model of consistency. I mean, I would think there was like a if you talk about a second baseman, I think he's got to be up there with the second baseman that has gone through the most shortstops and just still being consistent. I think he had a five-time All-Star. He was a good speed guy, pretty good on-base guy. Once in a while, he would get that average up and over 300. But just a good team guy, a hometown guy. How do you freaking not love you some Willie Randolph, man? One of my memories of Willie's too is when he just got his ass killed across town in Queens. The Mets just didn't treat him right, I don't think. They fired him. I forgot the conditions, but I remember the conditions just being like kind of, you know, it was somewhere around Father's Day, I think it was, where he got fired. I think that was it. And it was just it was not, and I'm not knocking the Mets because it's a business. You got to do what you got to do, but I did feel bad for Willie because it just didn't seem like they appreciated him the way they should, and they kind of just dumped him. And then I remember that was the year that the stadium was getting knocked down, and they were, that was 2008. And they invited Willie back for the last game of the season at the old ballpark, and I just remember having a nice ceremony, and everybody was kind of going out to the field, and old-time Yankees and new Yankees. By the way, that Yogi Berra piece, that still freaking brings a tear to my eye. Look up that one on YouTube, something like Yogi Berra, I Won't Miss This Place. Man, ooh, that was so moving. But basically, so he they invite Willie, and they call him out to second base, and he had just been fired from the Mets, and not just, but a few months before that, been fired from the Mets after being a lifelong Yankee coach, player, whatever. Finally gets his chance to manage the Mets. Doesn't work out. He's back at Yankee Stadium. They call his name. He runs out in his uniform and slides into second base because he's just saying, oh, man, am I happy to be back home. You know, the Mets experience is awful, and he's back in a Yankee uniform celebrating the final day of this beautiful, beautiful building where, and I will say this to you guys, if my Yankee fandom is ever in question, I was living in Pittsburgh when that happened, and they were knocking that stadium down. And it was a very busy weekend at work, and I really couldn't have been gone for long. And I decided in Pittsburgh to New York with no traffic is 6.5 hours. And I made the trip, grabbed a few buddies from Pittsburgh, and we made the trip. And I'm going to go off a little bit here. But, man, got myself a pair of sunglasses because I knew, you know what? I'm not going to get into this now. This is a long story. We're not in contact, so that's stupid. But I'm going to remind myself. I'm going to make a note. I'm going to tell my story about, just the Yankee Stadium last day and what Yankee Stadium meant to me. And as stupid as it sounds, you know, like I said in the last one, I'm a little bit more of a soulful kind of podcast, a little bit more on the romantic end of it than the whole hardcore stats and statistics and pitch by pitch of every game. I will get into my memory and my take on Yankee Stadium and through the years, what, you know, how it's just a microcosm of your life and how it's there for everything you do in your life. That stadium is there for every stage in your life. That stadium is there, and you can attach every memory and every stage of your life to that stadium, and you know, you just win every year. And I'm not gonna get into it now, So they honored Willie, and the great thing was it was a surprise for Mel Stottlemyre. Mel Stottlemyre, another similar situation to Willie Randolph, spent years as a Yankee, an ace of the Yankee staff, then went over to become the pitching coach of the Mets in the 80s, and then came back to the Yankees and was a pitching coach of the Yankees. He's been sick for a while. He's been battling illness, but he's Man, that was moving, and I don't know his current condition, terminal, under control, you know, remission. I don't know where he's at, but he definitely seems as though he's still battling a tough battle. And to get that surprise, it was cool because he thought that they were skipping him with the only announcements, because based on the names they were announcing, he thought he should have been announced already, and they didn't. And little did he know that he was being honored as well. Here's to you, Mel. He was just big a part as anybody, if that, you know, the 90s teams and that dynasty before the freaking sabermetrics kicked in, where, you know, these guys got to know every tendency and freaking how many pubic hairs each freaking, you know, each lefty has versus each righty. And, you know, it was more of a gut. It was more of a feel, as Joe Torre said to Brian Cashman, "Brian, don't you ever forget that there's a heartbeat to this game." And I couldn't agree more. So Mel was a part of that. Mel was. There was no binders back then. There was no, you know, overly managed based on past history and statistics stuff. It was just these guys trying to win every day. Mel, Joe Torre, and of course Don Zimmer, and Willie Randolph at third base. And those guys were just the coaching staff that gave us so much joy as well. No Jeter and no Posada at the game. I don't knock that. You know what I mean? I always thought it's weird when these guys who could probably still play the game are there running circles around these old-timers. Speaking of old-timers, Bernie Williams, why is he in center field looking like he needs a wheelchair already? Don't, Bernie, come on, man. You're making me feel freaking old. Are you serious? Do you have to run out to center field on a gapper like, you know, it's the first – like you're basically running the first quarter mile of a marathon and pacing yourself, and then you get the ball. He finally gets the ball, and he freaking underhands it in like Dan Quisenberry. I mean, Bernie, you're making me feel old, buddy. Come on. You could do better than that. You know, do some sprints. Put the guitar down. Put the guitar down. Run a little bit, you know. Bernie, come on. What is he? What is Bernie now, 46 years old? Let's go, Bernie. Get it together a little bit. And then I'll cap it off at one of the cooler moments that you'll ever see. While we don't have the identity, we don't have the superstars, we don't have the Jeters of the world, and we're not in the heyday. It's been a long time since the heydays of the Yankees, but one of the guys who was at the center of the heydays was Paul O'Neill, and we're lucky enough to have him in the booth. And you gotta freaking love this guy, because he's not a polished broadcaster. He's not like the, you know, you would never work right now probably on a national show or a network show, but for us, for being our guy, I love listening to Paul O'Neill in that booth telling old stories. And he's the guy. He's the irreverent guy. He's the wild card. What a freaking great guy the Warrior is. And last night, when was it? Tuesday night. The game is the game is what it is. I mean, I guess it was 6-6 at this point, right? So it was a tight game, but the game looked. Or was it 10-6? I don't know what the hell the score was. I know that it felt like it was a little bit of garbage time. And Michael Kay, jokingly, because there was Jimmy Fallon and Lorne Michaels in the audience, jokingly said to Paul O'Neill, you know, he was jokingly. He didn't expect him to do it. I don't care what you say. He basically said, hey, Paul, do me a favor. Go down there and ask him if he could appear on my sit-down talk show, which is Center Stage, as you guys probably know. Paul O'Neill's like, you want me to go down there? Yeah, sure, I'll go down. So, you know, you cut to the camera. They're showing Paul O'Neill. He leaves the booth between innings, goes down, walks up to Jimmy Fallon, Rudy Giuliani, Lorne Michaels, a bunch of other people, and just basically takes a selfie. I love that he didn't ask him. You know, he didn't ask him to go on the show. You know, he just basically went down there, says, do me a favor, take a selfie. I'm talking about Jimmy Fallon was more than happy to do that. Seems like a nice dude. I can't stand him after Fever Pitch, and I hate seeing him in a Yankee hat behind home plate after he makes a freaking movie like Fever Pitch. But whatever. And I know he's a Red Sox fan too. It wasn't just a movie. He likes the Red Sox. He's doing PR stuff, putting the hat on, walking around with Lorne Michaels. Come on, Jimmy. You're better than that. Well, maybe you're not. But just to have Paul O'Neill go down there live on broadcast, they play the highlights. He just goes down there and just does it. That's a guy who's basically, you know, half the stadium is left. He's trying to keep an audience, and he does whatever's necessary. Just the way he used to hit, the way he used to feel, he's doing it in the broadcast booth the same way. Whatever's necessary to keep these viewers into it. And Michael Kay was even like, man, you're out of your mind. I agree, but it was a great moment, one of the better moments. Go YouTube it or wherever. I don't know where you can see it these days. 75 different ways you can look this stuff up. Just do a search for it on YouTube. You'll see it. Paul O'Neill and Jimmy Fallon. It was a great moment, and thank you for several great moments over the last, I don't know how long this is, an hour or so, but appreciate it. Seems like these things are starting to run a little bit longer. I just did one the other day, so I'm trying to do my best, keeping them coming nice and frequently. Again, if anybody's still listening, please write me questions, comments, anything at yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. That's yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at yankeesandgravy. That is at yankeesandgravy. I have a Facebook page, no end. It's Yankee Gravy. Yankee Gravy. Very simple. And most importantly, it would be great if you could get that podcast app on your iPhone or your whatever, you know, smartphone you use, and download it. And once you get that podcast app, search for it's for iTunes. It's a podcast app for iTunes, I think it is. And it comes up first, so you can't miss it. And then once you get that downloaded, it's free. And then you just type in Yankees and Gravy and hit subscribe. Now you'll have it in your, you know, it'll be one of your apps that come up, the podcast app. You click on that. You'll see the Yankees and Gravy logo, which we got to do something with. I understand that. And then you'll be able to click on, and the newest episodes will automatically be delivered to you. Again, I make it sound 10 times more difficult than it is. Either way, once again, thank you so much for tuning in. I appreciate it. You guys are awesome. That is Yankees and Gravy for June 25th, 2015. Thank you.